அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி. திருச்சிற்றம்பலம். எல்லாம் செயல்கூடும் இன்னானை அம்பலத்தே, எல்லாம் வல்லான் தனையே ஏத்து. திருவிளங்க சிவயோக சித்தி எல்லாம் விளங்க, சிவஞான நிலை விளங்க, சிவானுபவம் விளங்க. திருவிளங்கு திருத்தில்லை திருச்சிற்றம்பலத்தே, திருக்கூத்து விளங்க ஒளி சிறந்த திருவிளக்கே. உருவிளங்க உயிர் விளங்க, உணர்ச்சி எது விளங்க, உலகமெல்லாம் விளங்க, அருள் உதவு பெருந்தாயாம். மறுவிளங்கு குழல் வள்ளி, மகிழ்ந்தொரு பால் விளங்க, வயங்கு மணி பொது விளங்க, வளர்ந்த சிவக்கொழுந்தே. அன்பினும் பிடியுள் அகப்படும் மலையே, அன்பினும் குடில் புகும் அரசே, அன்பினும் வளைக்குட்படுபரும் பொருளே, அன்பினும் கரத்தமர் அமுதே, அன்பினும் கடத்துள் அடங்கிடும் கடலே, அன்பினும் உயிர் ஒளிர் அறிவே, அன்பினும் அணுவுள் அமைந்த பேருளியே, அன்புருவாம் பரசிவமே. திருச்சிற்றம்பலம். அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி அபயம் அபயம். அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி. லெட் ஆல் லிவிங் பீயிங்ஸ் லிவ் பிளிஸ்ஃபுல்லி. July 22, 2018, வள்ளலார் யூனிவர்சல் மிஷன் யுஎஸ்ஏ வெல்கம்ஸ் ஆல் தி சிஸ்டர்ஸ் அண்ட் பிரதர்ஸ் டு அவர் சண்டே ஈவன். Today, our special speaker is Mr. Yogi Steven from Los Angeles, California, USA. On behalf of Vallalar Universal Mission and all the listeners today, we extend our warm welcome to our brother Yogi Steven to our Sunday Satvicharam event. Vanakkam, Vandanam and welcome, Mr. Yogi Steven.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your having me here and the opportunity to speak about Vallalar and spiritual science with you. It's a subject that I've been very involved in for many, many, many years.
Before you start, we'll actually have Mr. Jayaraj sing a stanza from Arutpa, and then we will begin your talk.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
Yes. அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி. வெல்கம் மிஸ்டர் யோகி ஸ்டீவன் ஆன் பிஹாப் ஆஃப் வள்ளலார் யூனிவர்சல் மிஷன் யுஎஸ்ஏ அண்ட் அதர் சன்மார்க். அருளும் பொருளும் யான் பெறவே, அடுத்த தருணம் இது என்றே தெருளும் படி நின் அருள் உணர்த்த தெரிந்தேன், துன்பத் திகைப்பொழிந்தேன். மருளும் மனந்தான் என்னுடைய வசத்தே நின்று வயங்கியதால், இருளும் தொலைந்த இனி சிறிதும் இழைக்க மாட்டேன் எனக்கருளே. அருளே உணர்த்த அறிந்து கொண்டேன், அடுத்த தருணம் இது என்றே இருளே தொலைந்ததிலர் அனைத்தும் என்னை விட்டகன்றே ஒளிந்தனவால், தெருளே சிற்றம்பலத்தாடும் சிவமே, எல்லாம் செய்வல்ல பொருளே, இனி நான் வீண் போது போக மாட்டேன் கண்டாயே. அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி.
தேங்க்யூ சிவராஜய்யா. ஐ வாண்ட் டு கிவ் அ குவிக் இன்ட்ரொடக்ஷன் அபவுட் யோகி ஸ்டீவன். யோகி ஸ்டீவன் இஸ் ஆக்சுவலி ஃப்ரம் லாஸ் ஏஞ்சலிஸ், கலிபோர்னியா, ஹியர் இன் யூஎஸ்ஏ. Yogi Steven is a lifelong practitioner and a student of spiritual sciences. He spoke at our event here in California last year, which was organized by Vallalar Universal Mission. And he is actively pursuing the immortal light body in the tradition of Vallalar, Tirumular and Tamil Siddhas. He has attended the darshan of the Jyoti at He has attended, Vadalur and, had the darshan of Jyoti at Satyanana Sabai on Thaipusam. And he received Diksha from Swami Trinyanananda of Coimbatore. He is interested in sharing the divine knowledge of the evolutionary spiritual science with all sincere and dedicated souls. So we welcome once again Yogi Steven. And Steven, please go ahead.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Yes, and I visited India a couple of times and spent a good amount of time there. I also did the pilgrimage to Mount Kailash in Tibet as well. So And I'm looking forward to visiting again, hopefully sometime next year. The spiritual science, it's something that that we hear a lot about, and you know, it has the two sides to it, spirituality and science. And it's my mission to bring both of those sides of the equation together, to resolve the two sides of the equation. And so we realize that spirituality and science are really one. And as far as Valalar, I'd say I've known about Valalar for about maybe 4 years. And prior to that, my interest had been in Raja Yoga and a variety of the yogas of India, as well as Taoism and Tibetan Buddhism. At a certain point, I made a decision, and I arrived at a resolve that the very purpose of life is to realize oneself as the divine, and that everything that we do is moving towards that end. Whether we're conscious of it or not, it doesn't really matter. All beings are moving towards that realization of self as divine. This is accomplished much more effectively when we become conscious of it. And this is what the yogi does. The yogi is the person who is conscious and knows that all of life is that process. And so when one becomes a yogi, one resolves that they will live in that consciousness, and that every step, every word, every action, every thought is dedicated to that. And you know, as a result, I began to intuit about the nature of that realization. And I think that generally speaking, for the most part, we have a perception of that realization as being a mental process, or a process that affects the mental body, and that our minds can become purified and clarified so that we have the perception, the direct perception of ourselves as the divinity. At a certain point, I think I began to question that, because the process that I was being involved in, as a result of the practices that I was doing, seemed to have another quality to it that was beyond purely the mental body. And my physical body was very much involved in a somewhat miraculous process of transformation, which continues to accelerate this very day. And so I began to question the nature of the process that I was involved in, and I started to seek out the answers about that nature. And this is what brought me to Valalar, when I started to realize that there are people who practice not merely to clarify the mind and purify the mind and have the mental realization, but that realization can extend to the total being, including even the physical body itself, and that the mind and the body are not separate. In fact, they are just one continuous unit in the divine design. And so I discovered the teachings of Valalar and the Tamil Siddhas in that entire lineage, and started to re-examine even the teachings that I had already been following. and learned that there's much more depth there once you understand that the divinization of the total being, including the body, is an actual path that is followed and can be followed. So, you know, Valhalla became an inspiration to me because, you know, of realizing that there was this amazing being who lived this fully. And he realized that our true nature as divinity, as Arupa Jyoti, as the supreme, is not only in the mind, but in the physical body, in the total being, in every aspect of being. And he completely surrendered his entire being to that realization. And he also gave us means and sadhana of how to arrive at that realization for ourselves, and sacrificed himself so that he could enter into the cosmos and be available to help all beings achieve this. And so this became a tremendous inspiration to me. And when I decided that I was going to go to Mount Kailash, I said, well, if I'm going to India, then at the same time, I absolutely must, you know, visit the south of India and make contact with the Sangam. And so, you know, I did. I went to Tiruvannamalai and met many people there who are followers of Valalar, and gained that familiarization with those teachings. And on my next trip, then, of course, I went to Badalur and, you know, went there for Thai Pusam for the revelation of the divine light. But, you know, in more study, I learned that Valalar really initiated the modern era of spiritual science. Of course, the spiritual science had already been there for many, many years, going all the way back to Tirumular. But he initiated what I would call the modern era of spiritual science, because the prior era of spiritual science was mainly the realization of the inherent divinity of mind. And of course, Sri Aurobindo calls this the mental being. And this is, of course, important, you know, if you want to realize and divinize the total being, you must also include the mind in this process. And certainly the mind is a powerful tool that the divine has designed for us to move forward in our process on this level of reality. So it's very important. But Valalar initiated the era of the divinity of body and mind. In other words, the divinity of total being, of the entire being. And he initiated that modern era. I would say it's the modern era because it was Valalar's work combined the direct knowledge that humanity was beginning to gain from the study of science with the spiritual traditions. And of course, the spiritual traditions where the nature of reality was intuited through direct contact with the divine goes all the way back to the Siddhas in Tamil Nadu, specifically Tirumular. But there's many, many branches of this all over the world that we have to recognize that the divine has always been trying to reach humanity with this understanding of the divinization of the total being. And we see it in the Taoism. The Taoism was, in fact, founded by Boganatha, who in China was known as Lao Tse, and you know, he started the Tao there with his primary student Pulapani. And these, of course, are recognized as Siddhas of the South Indian lineage. And then we have the Kriya Yoga of Babaji as well as another example of a path towards the divinity of body and mind of the total being. I find the teachings of Dattatreya in the Avadhut Gita and the Advaita to also be very copacetic, very, very much in line with the teachings of Valalar and the divinity of total being. One thing that has really impressed me very much is that when you understand these yogas, and then you start to study the teachings of Jesus Christ, you have the realization that Jesus Christ was also a guru of the divinity of total being. His teachings parallel Valalar's teachings in many, many, many points. It's very striking. I feel as though until I understood these yogas, I never really understood Jesus, but now that I understand the yogas, the teachings of Jesus come alive, and they become much deeper and take on an entirely new dimension. And the Tibetan Buddhist yoga is also a teaching of the divinity of body and mind, of total being. The original Buddhist teachings were very much a teaching of the realization of mind only, and somewhat of a rejection of the body. But the Tibetans evolved those initial teachings of the Buddha way beyond, far, far beyond, very much in the same direction as Valalar's teachings. And then, of course, we have the example of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Probably the most recent teachings that we have, which of course are very much of the modern age, after the 1900s, all the way up into the 1950s and 1970s. So there are quite a few teachings that we can draw upon and that we can value, and I certainly looked into all of these and incorporated them into the yoga that I practice. And it's important to understand that the divine has been reaching out to us through all of these different means. Unfortunately, our capacity to receive has been somewhat limited, but the divine impulse to reach us nonetheless is there. And up until Valalar, still the focus was very heavily on the liberation of mind only and a desire to sort of escape from samsara, from maya, from worldliness. And you'll see this in a lot of the teachings of the early yogas, that there is a mental focus and a sort of rejection of the world, and specifically a rejection of the body as an impurity. I think that's just a feature of the very early yoga, because humanity was still in the process of developing the mental faculty. It was still relatively new to us as a species, and it was certainly the defining feature of humanity was the development of the mental faculty, and what we could call the mind body, the mental body, has certainly distinguished us from the animals and set us apart. And that's certainly important. And so the total liberation of that mental faculty from the animal desires and the animal base that is the body, but certainly a natural impulse that we had and that we still continue to have. And in a certain sense, there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfectly fine. But Valalar has certainly called upon us to move beyond that into the total liberation of the entire being, body, mind, and every aspect of being. And Valalar initiated a movement away from dogmatic religiosity, from idol worship, from the worship of written word, from spiritual intellectualism, in favor of sadhana, in favor of compassion, and in favor of surrender to divine will and divine intelligence. So he is very important in that. And in fact, I would say this is one of the things that makes Valhalla very, very similar to Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, is that Jesus also came and he challenged the dogmatic religiosity of his time and the idol worship and the blind following without understanding of the words of the sacred scriptures, and the blind spiritual intellectualism that dominated the spiritual elite of his time, very much the same as Valhalla did. This is just some of the few comparisons that you can make between Valhalla and the teachings of Jesus. In fact, someday I hope to write a book comparing and contrasting the Valhalla and Jesus. I think it would be a very valuable contribution, something I have in mind to do eventually. But beyond all that, Valhalla began the process, initiated the process of uniting spiritual intuition, which is what the Rishis and the Vedas and the Greeks had had started, with the physical science. There's a good book out there. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. It's called Valhalla's Vision of Nuclear Physics and Nervous System by Tulasiram. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. I think it's Tulasiram. Valhalla's Vision of Nuclear Physics and Nervous System, in which he helps us to understand Valhalla's thinking on nuclear physics and his work in the direction of combining the spiritual intuition of the Rishis and the Vedas with the physical science that was starting to emerge at that time. In my view, science is spirituality. It's spirituality for which we have a reasonably well-founded understanding. Spirituality is science. It's science that we do not yet comprehend very well. So science is spirituality for which we have a reasonably well-founded understanding. Spirituality is science that we do not yet comprehend very fully. Science and spirituality continue to do a slow dance of pretending to be opposites, while at the same time coming to know each other as one and the same. And one of the things that's very exciting about this very moment in time that we live in is that this merger of science and spirituality is actively taking place right now as we speak. It may be the very defining quality of the time that we live in. I think the Germans use the word Gestalt. And this is something that when you understand that this process is unfolding and when you enter into this process and participate in it, it becomes very, very energizing and very inspiring. And that's why I am sharing this information with people now, because I want you to share in that energy and share in that inspiration. The scientists right now, at least a good portion of them, are very interested in what they're calling the theory of everything. And it's also frequently called the unified field theory. Please excuse me, I need to take a drink of water here. Good, so science and spirituality are beginning to agree on this point, that we must solve for consciousness. Now, This has not always been the case. There has been a split in the scientific community. And initially, most physicists would have said, well, we can say that consciousness exists. We can see that consciousness exists in human beings. We have some kind of a phenomenon that we call consciousness. We can say that probably the animals have some limited amount of consciousness. We can maybe say that plants have some very, very limited kind of consciousness. They may also go to the degree of saying that, say, the amoeba has some limited amount of consciousness and that it can detect its environment, it can detect the food source, it can detect changes in heat, changes in liquidity of its environment, these sorts of things. But now I think we're really at the point where most scientists will agree we must have an explanation for consciousness. We cannot simply say, well, we're going to explain the physical universe, we're going to understand the physical universe, but we don't need to understand consciousness. We don't need to be able to explain consciousness. I think at this point, almost all will say, yes, we must explain it. We must understand it. And of course, spirituality has as its very foundation that consciousness is primary. And that consciousness is the basis of all existence, of all phenomenon. And so there are basically three different points of view on this matter. Consciousness, the first point of view is consciousness is an epiphenomenon of matter. So epiphenomenon means it's a phenomenon that is produced out of something else. So if we say consciousness is an epiphenomenon of matter, we are saying that matter is primary and consciousness is produced out of matter. So as a result of having a brain with neurons that fire, with electrons that travel from one neuron to another, this network of neurons produces a phenomenon, an epiphenomenon, of consciousness. It's produced out of matter, and therefore the primacy is matter. The other point of view is that matter is an epiphenomenon of consciousness, in that the primacy is of mind. Mind comes first, and matter is a secondary phenomenon produced out of consciousness. And this has been the primary point of view of most people in spiritual life, particularly in the earlier yogas, particularly among people who emphasize the divinization of mind, the liberation of mind. They see that consciousness is primary, mind is primary, and matter is a phenomenon that is produced out of the field of consciousness. And then there's a third, more, what we could say, emergent point of view, which is that matter and consciousness co-create each other continuously. Matter and consciousness co-create each other continuously. And that the primacy is of the totality of divinity in a non-hierarchical, non-hierarchical way. That divinity is all. Divinity is consciousness. Divinity is matter. And the totality of divinity is primary. And there is no hierarchy between matter and consciousness. You cannot say that one comes before the other, or that the other precedes the other, or that one is primary and one is secondary, because all is divinity, simultaneously. Matter is divinity, and consciousness is divinity. And divinity is the totality of the entire phenomenon, whether it is the supreme, which is entirely unmanifest, and the field that we cannot even really say too much about because it has no qualities whatsoever, or whether it is the matter of which we can explore scientifically and look into in detail with our minds and with instrumentation that we create. There is a totality, there is a unity, an inseparable unity between the creation and the source of the creation. And I think this is the direction that that we're moving in. And in my opinion, I think if we were to ask Valalar, I think he would say yes, that this is actually the case, that we cannot make a separation between consciousness and reality, consciousness and existence, that they are inseparably the same. They are one. And this point of view is very strongly suggested by many of the quantum phenomena that physics has confidently observed during the course of the time that quantum physics has emerged since approximately 1925. I'm going to talk a little bit, and I'm going to move through this very quickly, and we'll have a PDF document that you can download later to follow up on these concepts on your own and do some Googling, and there's plenty of videos out there, and there's plenty of, you know, blog postings that can take you much deeper into this. But I'm going to go over some of the main quantum phenomenon that physics has observed, which very strongly suggests the unity of the totality of the divinity. And the first thing that you'll want to know about is what's called wave-particle duality, which has been primarily demonstrated by what's known as the double-slit experiment. So those are two terms that you can Google, wave-particle duality and the double-slit experiment. And this experiment, which has been done many times in many different variations, shows that matter propagates as a wave and collapses into an object upon observation by a conscious observer. And this is called collapsing the wave function. So this is key to understand, but it's also a little bit difficult to understand. I know it probably took me years to finally really get it, and not only get it, to accept it. But you know, in spiritual circles, we're very fond of saying that the world is not real, that this is Maya, this is illusion, that it's insubstantial, that it has no real substance to it. Well, this experiment and the resulting theory of wave-particle duality basically expresses that. It shows that matter is not a particle at all. It is actually a the material universe is a wave of possibility. Is a field of waves of possibility. And that these waves of possibility only become particles, which are the essential, fundamental, elementary objects that compose macro scale objects, like, for example, our physical bodies. They only become objects upon observation by a conscious observer. And this, again, has been demonstrated many times in an experiment. So this is leading many scientists to say that unless a conscious entity like a human being is actually looking at a phenomenon, at a body, it doesn't truly exist until that moment of observation. I think that this is true, but they're actually wrong about that in the extent that they do not understand that the conscious observer, which manifests the universe by its observation, is the divine itself. So this is where the scientists fall down, because they do not understand the totality of the divine. They do not understand that all is the divine. They do not understand that the divine is both the observer and that which is observed simultaneously. So instead of separating the world out into the conscious observer and that which is observed as if they were two different phenomena that are separated from each other, they need to understand, this is where we can help them, they need to understand that the divine is always observing everything all the time while also being that which is observed. So what they are observing in wave-particle duality in the double-slit experiment is true. It's just that their understanding of it is somewhat limited by the fact that they philosophically, ontologically cannot accept divinity yet. Okay? They're moving there. They're getting there. We're going to help them get there. We're going to help them get there. And they are getting there. They are getting there. And they have to get there because if they continue their experiments, this is the only conclusion that you can come to. This is the only resolution of all of the problems that they are discovering as they penetrate deeper and deeper and deeper with this wonderful tool of the human mind into the divine's universe. Well, the next thing I want to talk about is virtual particles. So again, in spirituality, we're very fond of saying, the world is Maya, the world is samsara, the world is illusion, it's not real, it has no substance. Well, the scientists have discovered that, in fact, the very initiating, concept, you can even say, is what's called a virtual particle. So one of the things that they have realized is that the space is not empty. Okay? It's full of something because their equations tell them it must be full of something, because the equations don't work unless you assume that the what they call the vacuum is not actually a vacuum, that it's not empty, that it has something in it. Well, it turns out that this something, which interestingly enough is also nothing, is what's called virtual particles. And the entirety of the universe, every single square microcentimeter, is full of a soup, or sometimes what they call a bubbling foam, of virtual particles that are popping in and out of existence in pairs, in positively and negatively charged pairs. So you get protons and antiprotons, quarks and antiquarks, electrons and anti-electrons, or actually what they call positrons, electrons and positrons, bubbling and popping in and out of existence absolutely everywhere. And they aren't real particles, though. They're entirely massless. And the only thing that they can be said, the only quality that they can be said to have is charge, positively and negatively charged. Well, right there, this is quite fascinating because we know that the divine existence is dependent upon the perception of duality, of this and that, of positive and negative, of light and dark, of present and not present, on and off. All these apparently oppositely charged dualities form the basis of reality, and this is what we have intuited, you know, since the rishis, you know, since the very beginning of yogic spirituality, we have known this. The Greeks also intuited this as well. Well, now science is telling us, yes, this is actually the case. Pairs of massless, oppositely charged virtual particles emerge out of the vacuum, which isn't actually a vacuum, and collapse back into it. They annihilate each other and collapse back into that vacuum everywhere in space-time, like a bubbling foam, and only sometimes become actual realized particles. And the process by which they become actual realized particles sometimes is something very important and very fascinating, which we don't have time to get into right now, but it kind of goes back to that process of observation by a conscious observer. When the conscious observer, whether it's us or whether it's an amoeba or whether it's the divine itself, when that conscious observer determines the need for a particle to be somewhere in some kind of a form, then it becomes that. It becomes a form in that place, in that time, in that space-time coordinate at that time. This is the process that we discovered in the first part about wave particle duality. The next thing I want to talk about is called quantum superposition. So the position in the, this is something, this is a phenomenon that scientists have discovered that says that the position and the momentum of particles cannot be simultaneously known. That in the double slit experiment, the slit that the wave will pass through to produce a particle is random and unknowable. We cannot know which slit that the particle is going to pass through. And this is called quantum superposition. So what this tells us is that there is a universe of possibility, that the universe is a field of possibility, and that which of the possibilities becomes actually realized is not knowable. That in fact reality exists in superposition, in many positions simultaneously, in that again the conscious observer will choose the realization of that virtual particle into actual realized state through its conscious observation. And again, the ultimate conscious observer is the divine. And it's very important to understand that when we, as conscious observers, make an observation, we are the divine making an observation. We know that we are not separate from the divine. We are not other than the divine. We are, in fact, instruments by which the divine is making that observation, or we could say that choice. We are the means, or one of the means anyway, by which the divine is making that choice. We are the tool by which the divine is making reality on a moment-by-moment basis. So the next point I want to get into is called quantum entanglement. And this phenomenon is the phenomenon that particles can become paired and entangled such that change in one particle is simultaneously reflected in change in another particle, in the other paired particle, even across vast distances and time. So the scientists, again, have discovered this, and they've discovered that this very, very confidently. pairs of particles become entangled. You have two electrons, one here and one in another galaxy. If you change the spin of the electron here, the spin of the electron in the other galaxy will immediately and simultaneously change. So this is what they call spooky action at a distance, the scientific term. But this explains or begins to explain many of what we call the siddhas, right? Bilocation, okay? Many different kinds of phenomenon, of psychic phenomenon, start to become explained by this phenomenon, by actually all of the phenomena that we've discussed so far, but including quantum entanglement. That there is a fundamental unity to all matter. Then what is the basis of that unity? It is the consciousness of the divine. Since all of these particles are being produced out of the divine, they are ultimately connected back into that source field and therefore are entangled. One point that I can make out of all of these points together, the wave particle duality, the virtual particles, quantum superposition, and quantum entanglement, all of these paint a picture of a universe made out of particles, which we can say these things about. A, they do not have any intrinsic mass. They have no substance. Again, for many, many years, and for thousands of years, we have been saying this. This reality is substanceless. Well, the scientists now agree with us. There is no intrinsic substance to these particles. We can say that they don't always exist, that their existence is dependent upon consciousness, that without conscious observation, they have no existence. We can also say that they sort of pop in and out of existence on a continuous basis, that they are not stable, that they have no permanence. Again, these are all things that we have been saying in spirituality going back to as far as you want to go. And again, the scientists are now saying, yes, this is actually how the universe is, that the very substance of, well, the very non-substance, we should actually say, of your very physical body, or what appears to be a physical body, is actually in a constant state of fluctuation of existence and non-existence. It happens so fast that it appears to be constant existence, but the fact is that the very particles that make up your body have no substance and no permanent existence in this dimension. They are constantly popping into and out of existence, coming out of the consciousness field, and returning to the consciousness field. Billions of times per second, who knows how fast. But in any case, this is the actual phenomenon of the universe, of our very bodies, of our very existence. The next thing I'd like to talk about is called gauge symmetry transformation. And again, this is something that the scientists are very confident about, in that their calculations of what's called the theory of quantum physics is these mathematical calculations are very exact, and they're very confident about it. In gauge symmetry transformation, all of the particles and the forces of the universe can be converted into each other, into any of the particles and forces. And that this is known, that all particles and forces can and are converted and transformed into each other. In the past, we would have called that magic, the ability to turn lead into gold, or, you know, take a body and make the body disappear into thin air, and then reconstitute the body in another place, to levitate the body, you know, these sorts of things we would call magic. Well, now science is saying, well, yes, this actually is what the universe is, in how it actually behaves, that all the particles and forces are not independent. They have a dependent origination in the consciousness field, and therefore can all be transformed into each other. the next thing I'd like to talk about is called gravity waves. So this is something very recent in 2012. It was observed that large-scale cosmic events, such as the explosion of a quasar or supernova, produce waves of gravity that propagate through the structure of space-time. So until the discovery of gravity waves and the observation of gravity waves, there were certainly many theories that space-time has structure, that it's not empty, that there's an actual fabric of space-time. And this was, of course, one of the contributions of Albert Einstein. But this has now been actually observed, because we can actually see the very structure of space-time wave or transmit the energy of gravity through its structure in waves when there are large-scale disturbances in space-time. this is very, very, very important, because it starts to tell us what the scaffolding is, the scaffolding upon which these these particles are grouped to form physical structures, upon which the divinity forms itself into shapes, into objects, into bodies, into life. That there is this background structure that forms the basis of reality. The next thing I'd like to talk about, and this is very cutting edge, but also an inevitable and highly significant development, This may be the most important piece in the puzzle. And this is that energy is information. So of course in spiritual circles we're very fond of saying all is energy, everything is energy. And even the scientists for many years have been saying, yes, you know, well, matter is energy. Matter is energy, and that everything can be transformed into energy, and energy is not lost. It only changes form. These are basic scientific concepts, but they're concepts in spirituality that we've also embraced. And we've all talked about energy, but problem is that no one can say, well, what is energy? What really is energy? The explanation that energy is not an explanation. You cannot define something as itself and have a satisfying definition. Well, where things are moving towards right now, which is maybe not completely satisfying, but it is very close to being very satisfying, is that energy is information. And for the computer scientists out there, I know that you're going to resonate with this, and you may already know that this is where physics is moving towards. Energy is the effect. This is important. Energy is the effect produced by executing an information set. Energy is an effect produced by executing an information set. Movement, any kind of variability in the space-time field, is the propagation of information through space-time media. So energy movement is the propagation of a wave of information through the space-time media, okay? So when we have a DVD or a hard drive, we call that a media, correct? So space-time is the media through which information is propagated as a wave is propagated through a media, right? So when a wave is propagated, it's propagated through a media. It's transmitted through a media. So if you drop a rock in water, the energy, the information about the rock hitting the surface, the boundary condition of the water, is propagated in the form of a wave from one water molecule to the next water molecule to the next adjacent water molecule through the media of the water. When I speak these words, the energy of the vibration of the air that is generated by my vocal cords is propagated through space, through the media of the air, of the atmospheric molecules of the air. The transmission of the information through space-time. Okay? So, all movement is actually the propagation of information through space-time media, through the very substance, through the structure of space-time, and potentially also the virtual particles that are bubbling inside of this space-time context. Energy is information. It's the transference of information. This is further demonstrated through the observation of black holes. So information is embedded in the black hole event horizon. This is something that was a contribution of Stephen Hawking. That the horizon of a black hole, when a particle enters a black hole, The surface of the black hole is called the event horizon. And on that surface, all the information about that particle or that object that enters the black hole is digitized and embedded on the surface of the black hole on the event horizon. So the information is not lost. It is simply transformed from the state of being an object to the state of being pure digitized information on the surface of a black hole, so that the black hole is a repository of information about the objects that have entered the black hole. And what does this remind us of? It reminds us very much of a hard drive, correct? Isn't this what a hard drive does? We type our information into the computer and it becomes digitized. Our information that originated in our minds and originated in the energy of our fingertips typing on the keys, and it becomes embedded as digital information on the surface of the hard drive. This is further extended into what's known as the holographic principle. The holographic principle is that the boundary of universal space-time, in other words, the boundary of our universe, which is assumed to have an actual boundary at some point, is actually a 2D surface on which the contents of space-time, every object that's in space-time, the contents of space-time, are holographically encoded on this 2D surface and projected into 3D, probably by photons. This is why light is so significant in our universe. Light is the means by which the divine takes the encoding of the holographic encoding on the 2D surface of the boundary edge between pure consciousness and existence, and creates physical or appear to be physical objects such as ourselves by projection into 3D using photons. And this is how the divine manifests us in itself, in its own self, in its universe, through this technology, essentially. So what I've described to you is that we are now at the point where the divine gift of the human mind has come very, very close to understanding the actual mechanisms by which the divine creates its universe and everything in it on a moment-by-moment basis, and verifies science through the mental faculty, through the mental being, is verifying the essence of the teachings from the Rishis all the way up to Valalar, all the way up to the current moment. The spiritual teachings are being brought forward into our mental state so that we can understand the actual truth of existence is the divinity, through and through, inseparably, without any otherness, without saying this is divine and that is not divine, without saying the divine is something other than myself. The divine is something other than the phenomenon of the universe. when we understand this science, we can no longer even have the concept of any degree of separation at all between anything and the divinity. We understand with our minds, finally, that all is the divinity and the divinity is all. These are the inescapable conclusions and that we can draw from the science that I'm briefly outlining to you today. And the reason why I feel it's important to share this is because, you know, for thousands of years, we have been going on faith. And it's not a bad thing to have faith. Faith is based on a kind of intelligence that we experience in our deep connection to the divine. We know these things intrinsically within our hearts, within the soul of our beings. We know these things to be true. We know that we are the divinity. We know that the divinity is us. We know this with our hearts, with our inner beings. But now we can also know it with our minds. And this helps. This helps a lot. I mean, I find that it helps me. I hope that it helps you. And I believe that once this can be understood by more and more people, it will help more and more people understand their true nature as the divinity and help humanity advance along the path that Valalar has set out for us, the Valalar and all of the traditions of the divinization of total being. Such to the point that we can say, well, we can't even really talk about the divinization of the total being because we are already divinized. We are already the divine producing itself out of itself on a moment-by-moment basis. Om Tat Sat. We are that. We are that. We already are that. So the next point I want to move on to is the digital universe and computer technology. And I know many of you are involved in computer technology. And I think it's absolutely amazing that human beings have somehow come to the point where the very functioning, as I have been describing, of the divine's universe, the very functioning of it is being reflected in our technology. What I have already described is a digital universe. It is made up of bits. It is made up of zero and one. Either zero, which is consciousness, one, which is existence. It is either present, on, or it is off. Not on, not present, not existent. Consciousness, existence, existence, consciousness, appearing as a binary system, but in fact a unitary, a oneness, a total process of being. And this is the essence of the universe as science has discovered. And it is information. It is information. And somehow we have chosen to externalize that in the form of our computer technology. Even before we knew this, even before we understood this, we were already doing it. It's interesting that, you know, they say that the divine created humans in its own image. And I think a lot of times when people hear that phrase, you know, that God created humanity in its own image, that, you know, they think, oh, well, you know, two legs, two arms, a head, two eyes, all of this, the physical form. But what we're learning is that that's not really what's meant by that. That, in fact, in its own image means with the same capacities, or with the potential at least for the same capacities. And if you study, Shiva Siddhanta, and the powers of Shiva, it's said that the realized human being attains the powers of Shiva, and that this is the evolution. And what we're seeing is that humanity, through the faculty of its mental power, which is a gift of the divine, which is in fact it is the divine expressing itself in its universe through mental faculty, through an analogy to the grand superconsciousness, which is the Aruperun Jyoti, which is the Jyoti, which is the supreme. Through that faculty, in the human being, in the human mind, we are externalizing an analogy to the very functioning of the divine itself in computer operations. In all of this, we can make analogies to, and very, 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 very direct analogies to bits, to hard drives, to the transference of information, and to the assembling of this information into meaning in formation. Okay? Assembling of bits into meaning in form that you can then be interacted with, self-interacted with. So we have already done that. We have accomplished this divine instruction set and externalized and become the creators of a divine operation. And now we're in the process of taking it even further and taking it beyond just simple zero and one, binary digital, into quantum computing, into qubits, which is a computerized field of possibility. In other words, we're going from particles, which is virtual particles either being on or off, either existing or not existing, into waves, into the wave function. We're going from the particle function. Remember, we talked about particle, wave, particle duality. We're going from the particle function to the wave function with quantum computing, where qubits are waves of possibility used to generate computer-generated reality. So we are the means of divinity externalizing itself into itself, externalizing itself and its powers into itself. The divinity becoming the divinity within the divinity. This is what we are doing. So when you are doing computer work for you, you are doing God's work. Okay? There is no aspect of human endeavor, which is outside of, independent of, and not derived from the divine operation. It is all part of it. Everything that we do. And we hope as spiritual beings to serve that functioning and that operation to the highest degree possible, to the degree that benefits sentient beings to the most possible. And if we can take that drive, which is within us already, into our work, then we can truly do divine's work. The next thing I want to talk about is consciousness. So every time I use the word consciousness, unless I'm talking about Well, no, every time I use the word consciousness, I am saying arupiram jyoti. Okay? It's just for the purposes of this talk, I am talking in more scientific terms. Okay? In the terms of spiritual science. Moving towards uniting the spiritual and the scientific so that we understand there is no separation. But consciousness is the best term I can come up with it for it, and this is what the scientists are using more and more. The word is called substrate. So the consciousness, the supreme, the jyoti, God, divinity, all the same thing. When I use these words, I'm basically all the same thing, is a substrate. So a couple of good examples of what you mean when you say substrate is the old school fax paper. Now a fax machine, we print on the paper with ink. But in the past, fax paper was the image would be revealed onto the surface of the paper through the application of heat to the paper. So the fax paper was a substrate. It was a condition in which the information is already there in the paper, and the application of heat brings the information that is already embedded in the paper to the surface so that it can be seen and interacted with. And this is the fax paper as a substrate. The other example is, I always loved the story of Michelangelo, in which he received a shipment of a new block of marble, and his assistant asked him, "So, master, what are you going to carve out of this block of marble?" And he said, "Well, I don't know." And the assistant said, "Well, master, how can you carve the block if you don't know what you're going to carve?" And he said, "Well, the statue is inside the marble, is inside the block. My job is to remove the outside parts that are covering up the statue, which already lives within the marble." And so this is another way of looking at substrate. That in the consciousness substrate, the reality already exists. It's simply a process of revealing it. We cannot really say much about the substrate, about the consciousness, about the jyoti. Why? Because it is, as we know, in the yogas, nirguna. It is without qualities. It has no qualities. Yet, at the same time, it possesses all qualities simultaneously. It is the substrate. It is a field of all fields. So, one of the mistakes that the scientists are making is that they're trying to break down all of the all of the qualities of the universe into distinct fields, and saying, well, there's a field for this, there's a field for that, there's a field for this. What they don't get is that there's a field of all fields. This is the consciousness substrate, the jyoti. It is the field of all fields. It is all possibility. Everything that can be, everything that ever has been, everything that ever will be, and everything that ever can be. All possibility, all waves of possibility are contained within it. Or you can't even say contained within it. You can say are it. Okay? All information that has ever been created, all information that ever will be created, all information that ever can be created, are it. All time, everything in the past, all future, all present, all dimensionality of time, all dimension, any and all dimensions, and no dimension at all, and ultimately uncognizable. It is unknowable. We cannot know the substrate. We cannot know the supreme, the jyoti, with our minds. We can only know it through direct experience. And this is the essence of spiritual practice, of sadhana, is knowing the unknowable through direct experience, through sadhana. And this is the almost all we can say about the jyoti, about the consciousness. Until we realize ourselves completely, as Valalar did, as the divine, and know in totality, in our total being, that we are that. There is no knowing the divine. That the divine consciousness substrate, the jyoti, the supreme. Not with our minds. So no matter how far we go with science, this level will always be beyond our instrumentation, whether it's the instrumentation of machines or the instrumentation of our minds. Now, people ask, well, why does the divine produce a universe? And of course, I think we can also say that we know that there's not just one universe, there's probably, you know, countless, limitless numbers of universes and limitless dimensions. Why does it produce this? What is the function? What is the point of having a universe with beings in the universe and everything that happens within it? Well, the divine is both is the totality of the substrate as well as that which is produced from the substrate. That which is on the surface, on that 2D surface, holographic surface of the substrate. And the divine is all possibility, but there is an impulse to solve for all possibility. Let me just take a quick break of water here. My throat gets a little bit dry when I talk at length. So, so there's this impulse for the divine to solve for all possibilities. And it is consciousness knowing itself in all variability. All variability. And space-time is sort of like what you can call, in computer technology, a sandbox. It's an environment in which the consciousness can run through all of the possibilities and realize every possibility. This is also related to the concept of lila, that the divine is play in its own universe, in itself. And the divine is going through this process of basically executing a script, a program, an algorithm of knowing itself as all variability, all possibility. And we are part of that process. That's what we are. The divinity, once it has that impulse to solve for all possibility, creates first the context. And we call this Chidambaram, space consciousness, Chidambaram. The aspect of Shiva that is space. And in this context, we're talking about Shiva as immutability, stability, the constancy, the context in which the universe takes place. And the fascinating thing, and I can't get into all the details now, although it would need its own entire talk, is that science has now identified the actual structure of space-time, or is in the process of identifying the actual structure of space-time, the geometrical, mathematical structure of space, of Shiva, is becoming known. It was first intuited by the Greeks when they identified what's called the Platonic solids. It has later been refined to the most basic unit is the tetrahedron. And this is basically a equilateral pyramid. And the most basic unit of that is the equilateral triangle in 2D, in two-dimensional form. The other versions of this were developed by a very brilliant divine mind, who we must all know about, named Buckminster Fuller. I encourage everyone to Google Buckminster Fuller and learn about him. And he came to what's called the isometric vector equilibrium, which is also known as the cube octahedron. And most recently, this has been refined even further into what's known as the gosset polytope. Okay, these are all terms that you can Google. When you download the PDF document, you can feel free to Google all of this and learn more about it. So, you know, for many years, we were told by the direct intuition and the direct contact of the rishis with Shiva, about the web of Indra, the web of Indra. Well, a lot of what I have described as having been discovered by the scientists is exactly what was described by the rishis as the web of Indra. Indra, of course, being another name for Shiva. And this is a lattice, a grid, a web, in space-time, in which at every node of intersection of the web, there is a jewel, which in every jewel, all of reality is reflected in every jewel. And this is, in fact, the essence of the holographic principle that we have described, the essence of the holographic encoding of the reality on the surface of space-time. So space is a field of infinite consciousness and infinite possibility. Infinite consciousness and infinite possibility, and it is the context within which the possibility becomes realized. And then, of course, we have time. Space and time, space, time. Shiva and Shakti. So I'm just going to use this basic model of Shiva and Shakti. So whereas Chidambaram is space consciousness, Shakti is existence consciousness. Existence consciousness. And that's us. You know, we are, at least on this planet anyway, the pinnacle of existence consciousness. So far. But existence consciousness is variability. Whereas Shiva is stability, constancy, Shakti is variability. And the divine is very interested in the variability, in playing out and in realizing all of the possibilities, all of the potentials. And, you know, these potentials in science are known as different qualities, such as position, where is it, scale, how big is it, mass, you know, how much weight does it have, how much space does it occupy, charge, spin, position, mass, charge, and spin. In other words, science has its own sort of table of what we call the gunas, right, the qualities of existence, the gunas. And it's very, very interesting to note that the geometric description of the rishis, of existence itself, of Shakti, is the Sri Yantra. And if you look at the Sri Yantra, the very interesting thing about it is that the triangles that make up, the nine triangles that make up the Sri Yantra, except for I think one or maybe two, are non-equilateral triangles. They are all different in the angles that make up the triangles. Whereas Shiva is equilateral triangles, Sri Yantra, Shakti, is variable. The lengths of the angles of the triangles are vary, and the grid that it makes up is a grid of non-equality. Okay? So this introduces variability into the equation of space-time and produces the effect of the stability producing reality. So the Sri Yantra, many thousands of years ahead of the scientists, illustrated how the divine produces something, the universe, out of nothing, which is the consciousness field. So we can say that reality is space plus time, which is space-time. Possibility becomes probability. Probability becomes realization. The selection by conscious entity, us, as the divine, acting as the divine through these bodies that the divine has created. For this purpose, the selection from the probabilities is realization, is making reality out of the divine source. The choice and selection from the probability field is the function of conscious evolution. Conscious evolution is consciousness knowing itself as itself through experience. And this involves making what we would frequently refer to as mistakes, doing things that cause suffering to ourselves and others. We don't have perfect information, so we make mistakes. We have obscuration from our very nature is obscure to us, so we make mistakes. But this mistake making in the choice selection process from the probability field is a necessary element of the conscious evolution. We learn by making mistakes. We learn by hurting ourselves and others. We learn through suffering. So this is important to understand because this is just part of the mechanism of the divine design. The divine has designed it this way. We can complain about it all we want, you know, but this is just how it works. And if you follow what I have been saying, and I know it's very complicated and dense material from the very beginning up to this point, this leads you into surrender. This leads you to acceptance. This leads you to surrender to the divine will. This leads you to surrender to the divine intelligence, which is simply far more capable of knowing how things need to be than we are. Having said that, even though we make mistakes all the time, I know I do, that ultimately, in the final analysis, in the equation, every choice that we make results in the ultimate, the final maximization of conscious evolution. The maximization of conscious evolution is always chosen, even when we make a mistake that causes us to suffer or that causes other beings to suffer. Even when we make these mistakes, it still brings forward the conscious evolution of the divine. It still brings forward this process of the divine knowing itself as the divine, of the divine solving for all possibility. A virtual particle becomes a realized particle when it is needed to fulfill the function of the divine equation, the selection of inequality, whether it's existence, charge, or spin of any guna, by a conscious observer, which is always the divinity as itself, is the agency of choice. It's the agency of choice. And this goes all the way back to the first point that I made about the double slit experiment and how waves become particles. So, in summarization, we can say that any object in space-time, whether it is a particle, whether it is a large body like a planet, whether it is an organic body like a human being, any object in space-time is consciousness. It is information. It is energy. It is consciousness in existence. And it is in the process of conscious evolution. This is true of any object in space-time. Speaking specifically of the human is consciousness. It is infinite energy. It is infinite information. And it is in the process of conscious evolution. Regardless of whether you know it or not, even the most ignorant person in the world is in the process of conscious evolution. They just don't know it. The difference between the yogi and the other person who doesn't know it is that they know, I am consciousness. I am infinite energy. I am infinite information. I am always in the process of conscious evolution. I am participating in that at all times. And the human being is the macrocosm of these quantum and pre-quantum laws that we have been describing. We are the macrocosm of that. The human being has, just as the most elementary particles do, the qualities of charge and spin, both physically and in our energy body, our spiritual energy body. And we have a spiritual, or what could possibly be called the quantum energy body, that can be turned on and developed. And this is the gift of the divine. First, we are given the gift of the body, the existence. Then we are given the gift of the mind, of the consciousness. The combination of the body and the consciousness, of existence and consciousness, of body and mind, is the next level of evolution, which is the quantum energy body or the spiritual energy body. And through that spiritual energy body, we can access infinite energy, and that is associated with the principle of Kriya, infinite energy, which is also infinite information. Infinite information is also infinite knowledge, which is the principle of Jnana. And thirdly, the third aspect of the triangle is divine will, which is Icha. Infinite energy and information, infinite knowledge, and infinite will. Through the quantum energy body, through the spiritual energy body. Now, what I have just done is simply put into scientific spiritual terms, spiritual scientific terms, terms that unite spirit and science, what Valalar accomplished in his sadhana. I have described in current understanding what Valalar accomplished in his sadhana, what Valalar described in his sadhana when he said, this is what was happening to me, this is what I did, this is what happened to me. I took what he said and I put it in the terminology, in the context, in the mental formation of our current scientific understanding, blended with our spiritual understanding. Okay? The quantum energy body, the spiritual energy body, is the next level of evolution which Valala has urged us, begged us, pleaded us to pursue. And it is available to us. I can personally tell you, without the least shred of doubt, that this is available to each and every one of us because we have been intelligently designed by the divine to possess this, to develop this, to access this, and Valala did it. Jesus Christ did it. There are probably others, some examples we can also point to that, you know, either to one degree or another have also done this. Babaji is probably the other example that pops to my mind right now at the moment. They have told us this is not something only for me. Only Valala can do this. Only Jesus can do this. Only Babaji can do this. No, the reason why they came is to point out to us that this is the divine design of the human being. It is within our reach, and it is within our capability. And they tried to give us ways of doing it. They tried very hard to communicate to us, okay, do these things, okay. Live like this. Okay. Understand this. Understand this. Okay. Much has happened since Valalar's time, of course. You know, Valalar was the product of the Tamil Siva lineage, starting with Tirumula. He was produced out of that spiritual and historical context, and you could say cultural context as well. So, for many people in the West, if they're going to read Valala, unless they have a very deep background in the spiritual science, it's going to be extremely difficult for them to understand. Unless it is related to some of the concepts that I have been describing in this context. Valalar was like all of the teachers, like Jesus, for example, okay? Again, he is a product of a lineage. He is a product of a time. He is a product of a culture. And to understand him, you have to have some kind of a basis in understanding that which he was produced from. So probably people in the East maybe don't get Jesus quite the way that people in the West do. You know, although I would argue that 99% of people in the West don't understand Jesus because they don't understand yoga. If you understand yoga, you can understand Jesus. But anyway, in any case, much has happened. Obviously, scientific understanding has proceeded in exponential fashion since Balalar's time. And I think in general, spiritual understanding has expanded since Balalar's time. So we're at this point, however, where the what I would call the yogas, whether it is the yogas of Balalar and Tirumula, whether it is the yogas of Jesus, whether it's the yogas of the Tibetan yogis or the Taoists or any of them, or Babaji or anything, they're falling behind. We're falling behind the scientists. We're falling behind athletics. In this field of athletics, amazing things are happening. They're falling behind even some of the newer branches of spirituality. Because we're referencing ourselves back to the past. We have yet to bring ourselves into the current moment. And this is part of the reason why I'm giving this talk today. And why I would like to give this talk to anybody who's willing to listen. In order to truly realize the teachings of Balalar, we must take the teachings of Balalar, the essence of those teachings, and bring them into the present day. And bring them into the present understanding. I'm not saying to change them, but to culturally and adapt culturally and in terms of time, adapt to today, to now, to the present moment, to where we are, so that people can understand. Now, one of the things that attracted me to Valhalla and impressed me with Valhalla, and I referenced this earlier, is the fact that he eschewed, or he called out the religious orthodoxy of the day, just exactly the same way Jesus did. And he said, you know, you people are looking at these old books and you are just reciting blindly these prayers without understanding what it's all about. And he had the courage to say this. You know, he said, the way you're organizing societally, these caste system, these levels that you have created, is false. You know, he called out the orthodoxy of the time, and he was very brave about it. And this was very, very necessary. And he said, don't be obscurantist. Don't hide behind statues and symbols and things that obscure the true meaning of the divine teachings. We as a species are now grown up enough that we don't need to be told the stories of children in anecdotes and you know, in, hopefully I didn't lose you there. Okay, we don't need this. We need the direct realization of the Supreme, the direct realization of Arupirun Jyoti, the direct realization. So this is very, very important that we carry through with these teachings of Valalar. And as I have explored the teachings of Valalar, and I explored the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and Mother, both here in the United States and in India, I find that still, even though these have been the teachings, we are still very much involved with the mind. That the yoga of the total divinity of body and the total divinity of being has been lost, and not sufficiently advanced. And now is the time for us to truly embrace the total divinity of body and the total divinity of being, and to not simply practice the yogas of the mind. There's far too much reading of texts and talking about the reading of texts and the parsing of the content of texts, and not enough sadhana, not enough practice. We have to avoid turning Valalar and Arupirun Jyoti into idols. And we have to understand that Valalar and Arupirun Jyoti are not something other than ourselves. That Valalar and Arupirun Jyoti are all beings and everything, including ourselves. I'm getting a lot of static on the line, so maybe something needs to be muted there. Is it a lot of static now? There we go, it's gone away. So in general, virtually anybody that you talk to in spiritual life will agree that all is divine. The divinity is everything and everything is the divine. But I find that in practice, we don't really believe it. Not really. We say that all is divine right up until we confront something that we don't like, that we consider to be not in accordance with what we believe the teachings to be, or that some action by a being harms us in some way. But the true path, I think, of Valalar and the true path of the divinity of total being is to truly embrace the allness of the divine in the total process that I have described, which concords with both the spiritual teachings and our current understanding of science. We talk a lot about compassion, but we don't yet fully understand what compassion truly is. Compassion is frequently referenced as an act of compassion, so such as, giving food, which is wonderful and perfect, and it's something that we absolutely should be doing. But we don't understand that compassion isn't an act. Compassion is a jhana inside of ourselves, a knowing inside of ourselves that each and every being is absolutely, completely, and totally indistinguishable from ourselves and indistinguishable from the divine. Each and every being, this is compassion. And when you understand that we are exactly the same in the way that I have described, we described the actual functioning of this unity, of this sameness. I described it in scientific detail. Okay? When we understand what this compassion is, what the truth of this unity, then the compassion arises naturally from within, and the willingness to help and support all beings in every way possible becomes natural within us. And sometimes I find this is missing. So it is this understanding that we need. And one of the reasons why we want to bring forward these scientific understandings is that it leads us to the true realization of compassion within. Another thing that I see is that, again, this goes back to being still stuck in primarily with the mind, still stuck in primarily working with the mind, is that we are not interested in our bodies, except maybe for some small interest in diet, nutrition, and supplements. We find that some people are interested in diet, nutrition, and supplements. But in general, we are not interested in our bodies. In general, we still have the attitude that our bodies are these impure things that we need to escape from. We must completely understand that our bodies are gifts, that every aspect of our bodies is divine in nature, is divine in intelligence, and we must become extremely interested in our bodies, in how they work, and in not just how they work, but in actually working with the body. In general, there is a lot of interest in talking about the teachings and, unfortunately, a great lack of acting upon the teachings. In general, we are not substantively different from religious congregations in that we are, again, still stuck in looking at texts, looking at the past, trying to observe, like for example, in Christianity, we have the commandments, you know, the Ten Commandments that basically keep us from, you know, doing wrong things if we obey them. So this is fine, and it's important to have these types of commandments in our spiritual life, but it's not the same thing as sadhana. Sadhana is what Valalar called upon us to do, and sadhana is what is generally lacking in our spiritual lives. I have seen it. I have seen it over and over and over again. And this is where the rubber meets the road. The reason why it's important to bring this up right now is because this is the time. The scientists are confirming for us the truth of our beliefs, of our teachings. The scientists are confirming for us the truth of Valalar's teachings. That means that now is the time to take those teachings and put them into action, into sadhana, into consistent action in our lives in every single second, of every single moment, of every single action, of every single thought of our lives. Sadhana, 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 practice, practice, practice. I found it very interesting that Valalar and Jesus said the exact same thing. They both said, not when, you know, when they were ready to go, you know, to merge with the divine, when they were on the precipice of this transformation, each one of them said the exact same thing. Not one of you has understood or sincerely tried to implement these teachings. So therefore, I will show you what I'm talking about. Since you need, Jesus said, you need signs and miracles, otherwise you will not understand. And so they showed us the reason why Valalar did not stay with us and allowed the divine to transmute the particles of his body from realized state into non-realized state is because the people of the time in that day, in spite of his best efforts, did not understand. And so he had to show them. Jesus ran into the exact same problem. And so he said, okay, I'm going to have to show you. And so he did. Okay, so as I say, now is the time for us to take the lead. You know, any of the yogas of the divinity of total being, no matter what tradition you practice in, the tradition of Valar to me is one of the top, is if not the top. But we need to be actively engaged with the scientists. We need to be actively engaged with the sports scientists, and with the this is something I can get into. What's happening in sports science is amazing. They're learning so much independently of us. But if we can bring our understanding to the scientists, if we can bring our understanding to the sports scientists, if we can bring our understanding to the newer forms of divinity that are starting to emerge spontaneously. Remember, you know, divinity continues to act. Divinity continues to go through its process regardless of what we do. If we fall behind, divinity does not stop. You know, so, but now is the time for us to take these other aspects of humanity by the hand and lead them. And at certain points in the talk today, you know, I indicated, okay, the scientists have come very, very far, but they haven't gone all the way. Why? Because they don't accept the divinity. Not really. I mean, they go to the edge to where the divinity is highly implicated, but they won't cross that boundary. Why? Because traditionally there has been this separation between spirituality and science, and they have been appearing as a duality and appearing to be in conflict with each other. This has been a long, 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 long history, but now is the time for that to resolve itself into the unity, the spiritual science, okay? And the science of spirituality, the spiritual science, it's happening now. And I firmly believe that if we believe in the teachings of Valar, if we understand the teachings of Valar and the yogas of divinity of total being, then we must be part of that process. We must be active part of that process with respect to the views of the scientists, respect to the views and the practices of the athletes. We must engage. So, in final, the last part here, what can we do? Okay, what can we do? Well, the study of science is important, and it helps us understand how, this helps me so much, how unbelievably small we are, and how incredibly brief is our existence. How utterly insignificant I am. If you have a realization of your smallness, a total realization of your smallness, a total realization of the brevity of your existence, a total realization of your insignificance, then you will become like Valar instantly. The degree to which we do not realize this is the degree to which we have obscuration. So this is something that science helps us with, because if you study these things, you cannot be anything other than completely impressed with your own smallness, with your own brevity of existence, with your own insignificance. In order to realize ourselves as absolutely everything, which we are, we must first realize ourselves as absolutely nothing. We literally are no thing, and the science is teaching us this. We literally are no thing, nothing. We are not, literally not things. The science teaches us this. Not things. We are insubstantial. Completely insubstantial. The only substantiality that we have is we are the consciousness of the divine. Very briefly assembled into a form through this process that I had described. We have to become very interested in the divine gift of the physical body. So the divine has gone to a lot of trouble to create this mechanism by which physical form is manifested out of consciousness. But we must become very, very, very appreciative of the divine gift of existence. Every single moment of existence must be imbued with a total appreciation for the gift of existence and the gift of the physical body. The divine has designed this physical body with its intelligence. The scientists are entirely impressed by it. They're in absolute wonder about the functioning of the physical body. Every aspect of it, the neurology of it, the joints, the muscle tissue, how it all works together, the brain, everything, every aspect of it, entirely impressed and unable to really truly explain it. Working with the physical body is not an optional sadhana for the yogi of the total being. It is not optional. We must engage the physical body. We must become very interested in how it operates and interested in maximizing our personal operation of the divine gift, exploring every joint, exploring every muscle, exploring every neurological connection from the feet to the crown of the head. We really must become very, very interested in it. And we can do this not as work. We can do this as play, as play. In fact, we must play. The divine has given us this physical body so that we can play in it. We must run, we must jump, we must hop, we must skip, we must throw, we must pull, we must push, we must lift, we must carry. These are all natural physical functions which we rarely do. It's a rejection of the physical gift that the divine has given us when we don't do these very basic things. Now, I'm not saying that we all have to do them at the same level, but we all should do them at whatever level is available to you right now, today. Begin some form of physical sadhana now. Begin playing in the divine's body now. It can be a nice relaxing hatha yoga class. It can be some tai chi. It can be some vigorous exercise. But it must be something. It must be something. The realization of the divinity of the total being can't be done by excluding the physical body. The physical body is a vehicle, not an obstacle. It must be embraced by the yogi. The other thing is surrender to divine will. As I've described this process that science has identified for us, we must understand that in truth, we do not have an independent will. We appear to have an independent will. We appear to have self-will. But in truth, the divine is always acting through us. The extent to which we resist the divine acting through us is the extent of our unhappiness. And it is the extent of our obscuration. It is the extent of the limitation of our practice. When we surrender to divine will, when we fully allow divine will to act through us and as us, because remember, there is no distinction between us and the divinity, then this realization, if you have total surrender to the divine will, again, and Balala says this clearly, then you will become like Balala, you know? And again, the surrender to the divine wisdom, to the jhana of the divine. You know, as I've described this in the science again reveals this to us. We cannot hope to know all that the divine knows. We cannot hope to understand all that the divine understands. We can only hope to allow the wisdom to flow through us, to be expressed through us, to be expressed even better as us, allowing total surrender to divine wisdom to be expressed as us, as our being. Again, if just this one point, if you are able to make that surrender total, you will become instantly as Valala, as Valala did. The divine action, everything that you do, whether you know it or not, is the divine taking action. Now, the quality of that action is dependent upon the quality of your realization. If your realization is, I know that all action is divine action, then the quality of that action is going to be the action of a yogi. It's going to be much higher than the average person who does not know that all their actions are divine actions. And this is something, you know, that you take from Sri Aurobindo, that all life is yoga. Everything that we do is yoga. From every thought, every action, every word, everything is the process of the divine, knowing itself as the divine through us, as us. This is what life is, whether it's taking the kids to school, doing your job, you know, going shopping, taking care of your spouse, whatever it happens to be, or just taking care of yourself. Every aspect of life is always yoga all the time. There's never any separation at all between any aspect of life and your yoga and your sadhana. It's all sadhana. We cannot have any separation in our understanding between what is spiritual life and what is other life. You know, there is no other life. When we are unhappy, it's because we don't understand this. Okay? People are unhappy mostly because they are living in obscuration from this fundamental truth. When this fundamental truth is revealed, when it is lived actively, then happiness naturally arises. Another point is, and this is something that I'm going to expand upon more and more in the future, to me has been essential and key in my personal process. You can say, conquer hunger. What do I mean? Well, when I say the word hunger, immediately in your mind you think of food, okay? And the sensation of the need for food to enter the body. When I use the word hunger, I mean it in that sense, yes, but what I'm saying is that hunger for food is the same as hunger for objects, say for a car or a big fancy house or something, or a hunger for a person, you know, hunger for relationship, hunger for love, hunger for anything that is outside of ourselves, or that we perceive, because it's only a perception, there is nothing outside of ourselves, but hunger for anything that is outside of ourselves is the same as hunger for food. We believe that we are sustained by externalities. The first obvious, the most obvious form of that is food. Yet, we know we are infinite energy, okay? We are sustained by the divine at all times. This is, again, it goes back to the physics, to the science. The science tells us this. We are continuously emergent out of the divine consciousness field on a moment-by-moment basis. It is not food that sustains us. It is the divine which sustains us. When we realize this completely, the necessity of externality diminishes. And we lose the need for food, energy, as an external power source, because we are continuously powered by the divine. The practice of fasting is essential and extremely powerful. And there's many ways to accomplish it. It doesn't mean, you know, simply not eating any food for 40 days or whatever it happens to be. There's many degrees of fasting. There's many styles of fasting, and there's many kinds of fasting, but they are all available to all of us if we want to take the yogic discipline, the sadhana, to pursue it. And I'm very happy to help anybody with this if they would like to have some assistance. I always tell myself, I am fulfilled in the light of the Lord. I am fulfilled. I am filled up. I am sustained. I am fulfilled. All is fulfilled right now. Right now. In the light of the Lord. In the Arupa Jyoti. It's important to understand that all impulse originates as the divine impulse to know itself as itself. This is the foundational impulse of the universe. The reason why the universe was created, or is not was created, but is being created constantly as an ongoing creation, on a moment by moment basis, is the divine to know itself as itself. In any other impulse, whether it's any impulse that comes in the form of any of the hungers or anything, is a derivative of that. It is derived from that initial impulse, and it takes these other forms because of obscuration of the lack of knowledge that what we are is the divine knowing itself as itself. And the final point is that we cannot become divinity. There is no becoming the divinity, because we are embodied divinity already. It is the essence. And again, this is what the science tells us. The science tells us this. We are that. All is divinity. Divinity is all. Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. I am that. We are that. The removal of obscuration tells us this. The knowledge, the jnana, even the physical science knowledge helps us to remove this obscuration, to understand Om Tat Sat, I am that, I am the divinity, right now. So this concludes the talk. Aripiram Jyoti Andeshivam. Please know that you are the light. Namaste. Thank you. If there's any questions, certainly willing to take the time to answer them now.
Thanks, Steve. That was a wonderful talk. I think you very well articulated about the connection between the science and spirituality, with a lot of insights into that. Let me quickly get into Q&A sessions. I think it's been a 2.5 hours. I'm not sure how many people are still going to want to extend and listen, but let's go with at least few questions. Before that, let me read the disclaimer. Valalar Universal Mission is headed by Thiru Arut Prakash of Valalar, and the organization is open to one and all. There is no discrimination due to caste, religion, philosophy, race, color, language, age, sex, or any other differences. This organization will follow the principles of Valalar and considers them as fundamental and the greatest of all. Thus, it can be considered as Samarasa Sutta Sanmarga Satya Sangam. We request all our guest speakers to stick to the principles of Valala in their speeches. One must be aware that the opinion of the speaker is not necessarily the opinion of Valala Universal Mission. All the speakers are free to deliver their messages and opinions. Also, the listeners and participants are free to support or not
the speaker's opinion. However, everyone must refrain themselves from hurtful words and show love and respect to each other during the discussions. This message is read on behalf of Palava Universal Mission. Thank you. So we can start with the QA sessions. Friends, if you have any questions to Steve, please go ahead and ask. Okay, so let me ask the question that I have in mind. Steve, I think it was a very good talk. And in fact, one comment I want to give based on what you said. You mentioned that, you know, from a marble, just a, you know, marble stone, how a image is derived, and which means, like, you know, removing all the unnecessary things which will bring the image into that. So, you know, I'm just correlating this with what Vallalar said, right? You know, within us we have the divinity, and to remove that, you know, we have to remove the wheels, and that is what he showed as the seven wheels in Nyanasabai in Vadalo. I think, you know, yeah, that correlates a lot. That's something, you know, I wanted to comment. And second thing is more like a question. You mentioned that we are divinity, and that is understood. But if that is the case, and divinity is the one that does, and it is the one that happens, right? You know, that's what you mentioned. So why is this drama taking place? You know, why is the consciousness or the Arut Perum Jodi, you know, do all this play where, you know, he himself creates something, then, you know, he executes, and, you know, everything by him, and what is that, you know, we are gaining, and, you know, what are any insights on that?
Well, it's a good question, and it's certainly one that's worth asking it's worth asking. On another sense, we may need to surrender the understanding of why, possibly. Why may be embedded in the functioning. Again, another reason why do we go to the science? Why do we look at the science? Well, the science shows function. And we can see that this function is there. There is this, and what you're raising is the function of the conscious observer. And the function of that, again, the process that I described in science of the choice, of making conscious choice. And it comes down to that the divine is attempting to realize, in other words, make real all possibility. Now, we have a hard time accepting this, because in old school religiosity, we are taught that the divine is only that which is pure, or what we perceive with our limited intelligence to be pure. The divine is only that which we consider to be good, or what with our limited minds we consider to be good. And it doesn't appear at all that this is the case. That the lesson is that the divine is all. This includes all of the bad choices that we make, all of the harm that we do. It's still divine, because it's the divinity working through this process of self-knowing, of self-cognition, through error. I think in computer technology you have this thing, again, it's amazing that we can actually, any of these points, we can actually reference to some sort of principle in computer technology. And in computer technology you have this thing called error correction, you know? And without making mistakes, however, the intelligence cannot error correct. So when an error is corrected, then it's resolved on a higher level. You know, so it's through the process of error that the realization of the universe becomes higher. There's a something I would recommend. Everyone who studies Valalar should also study the Christian cleric. His name was Teilhard de Chardin. Teilhard de Chardin. Teilhard de Chardin, who said that the universe is in this process of knowing itself as itself, and this will result in all matter, and now Sri Aurobindo talks about this as well, all matter eventually coming to know itself, all matter becoming conscious, fully conscious. So matter moves from being unconscious, essentially not knowing itself as itself in any way, to eventually through different levels of life, gaining increasing levels of consciousness to the point where it gets to the level of humanity, which, you know, knows its own self-existence. You know, we don't know in general, unless we have much sadhana behind us, we don't know that we are the divinity, but we do know that, you know, we know that we exist. You know? So the divinity is going through this process of evolving matter to the point where it knows itself entirely as itself, and all of the universe becomes consciously that divinity. And that process involves error correction. Going through all of the possibilities, and realizing all of the possibilities so that, it can arrive at that supreme state. Individuals can accomplish this before the whole universe does, as Valalar did. Valalar did this before. And, you know, to stand as an example of the eventual evolution of matter into consciousness. So the divine is simply that process. And I think at a certain level, that's part of the surrender, is to simply surrender that this is the divine process. This is, and it includes, you know, it includes for better or worse, but it's always for better, because ultimately the result is going to be this divine consciousness, universal divine consciousness. You know, we have to accept the suffering that goes along with it. You know, that hopefully that answered your question.
Sure. Thank you very much, Steve.
Does anyone have any other question?
Okay. I think, sorry, someone was asking a question.
Prasanna, this is Anbu. I just want to make a comment, you know, like I'm going to listen to the recording few more times, because you touched upon so many topics, that requires a deeper understanding. My question is about sadhana. You mentioned the path to sadhana. Sadhana has a different understanding and different meaning. For some, it is physical practices. For some, it is meditation. For some, it is how you conduct your life. What is sadhana? Perhaps maybe we are running out of time. This might be like a bigger topic itself. Like if you can help us understand at maybe at a later time, I would really, really appreciate that.
Well, it's an excellent question. It's a brilliant question, and it's the right question to be asking. And I definitely think that sadhana for one person is not sadhana for the next person. It can't be, it's very personal. The sadhana that I do may not be appropriate for you, or maybe some aspects of it are, but some aspects would not be appropriate. This is where a good teacher can be helpful in helping you identify what is the most essential sadhana or the practice for you. The first thing that is sadhana is understanding that all life is yoga, okay, and understanding that we are engaged in a process of conscious evolution. Once you understand this, then you understand that, okay, there are steps that I can follow that will help move this conscious evolution forward. What is the conscious evolution? Well, the removal of the obscuration that separates us from knowing, fully, truly knowing, not just in an intellectual sense, but in a total being sense, that we are the divine, you know, expressing itself in its universe. And whatever accomplishes that is sadhana. So for one person, running a marathon, maybe that may actually be sadhana for them, because in the running of the marathon, this is the space in which they develop that realization. For other people, sitting completely still in meditation, maybe. For some people, it may be both. So I do both, you know. I'm very active physically, but I also am very still, for very long periods of time as well. So I combine the two. But, a good teacher, a good guru, is going to help you understand yourself, where you're at, and help you identify, okay, what you want to do, and when you meditate, look inside yourself and ask yourself, what is the primary obstacle that is holding me back from understanding myself as the divine expressing itself in its universe? What is the obstacle? What is most in my way? And then, once you understand what that is, then what would be the practice, out of all the practices that I am aware of, what would be the practice that would help me remove that obscuration the most and focus on that? Maybe for most people, it may be best to focus on one particular form of sadhana. Since I've been doing this for quite so long time, and I have what we could call a large toolbox with lots and lots of tools in it, I can do many different types of practice, you know, and I can combine them all in very creative ways. And I know my internal landscape, my internal mechanism very, very well. I'm very intimately familiar with it and how it operates. So it all depends on your level of familiarization with your own process, your level of understanding about where you're at, your level of understanding about what your primary obscuration is, and an understanding about what is the best tool to use for removing that obscuration. Consult first with yourself, which is to say, consult with the divine. When you turn inward and you consult with yourself, you are consulting with the divine. Ask the divine, divine, help me. I want to know, how can I come closer to knowing myself as yourself? What is in my way, divine? Help me understand. If your mind becomes quiet, then the divine will answer. And you will get a message about what is your primary obscuration. And you will get an answer about what to do about it. So you can also, ask a teacher, to help you with that. And a good teacher will help you analyze yourself, so that he can help you arrive at that understanding. I hope I answered the question. If I didn't, please follow up with another question.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, you did answer the question, and I think I will start with the question to myself.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Okay, you're welcome.
And this is Gopi. I mean, just to add my two cents on the same topic about sadhana, according to my understanding, like when you were talking about, you know, more than studying and reading, like, you know, we have to practice the sadhana, start, you know, the sadhanas. So Vallalar talks about Parobhagaram and Satyasaram. He categorizes like all the sadhana to be under two topics, which is Parobhagaram and Satyasaram. Parobhagaram is like, you know, be compassionate and help others, which is Jivakarnya, what he is referring to.
Yep.
And Satvasaram is, you know, examples of Satvasaram is like meditation, self-inquiry. Satvasaram, the meaning translates to inquiry of truth. So it could be a type of meditation, sit simply without movement and like start observing ourselves and start about, I mean, talking to God or like, you know, ask questions ourselves to your point, like, you know, what is the truth? Like, you know, how can I get closer to you? Things like that, you know. So those are the two words I wanted to just, you know, bring it to the table. Parobhagaram and Satvasaram. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that, that stands out about, Vallalar's teachings is the focus on compassion. But, it's super, super important for us to understand compassion, not as an act, but as an internal condition, as an actual realization. And that realization is that we are all the same. So, you know, the happiness of someone else is my happiness. There's no separation between me and someone else. We are that, you know, always. When someone else suffers, then I suffer as well, you know, because we understand, you know, Om Tat Sat, I am that, I am that, I am always that. I cannot be separated from you. I cannot be separated from any aspect of existence. It is all fundamentally one, and it is all fundamentally the same divine. It only has the appearance of being different or separated. So, it's important to take divine action, compassionate action. But it's very, very possible for someone to take a compassionate action without actually experiencing compassion. This is very possible, you know. So it's important that we take compassionate action out of a place of realization that we are all the same, that the happiness of another is my happiness, the suffering of another is my suffering. So that I think is important. And then as far as the more practical aspects that you described, like meditation, absolutely important to meditate, in my opinion. We must, in order to make contact with the divinity, it's very important to be still. The Shakti is, as I said, variability and movement. And we should not despise the Shakti. We should not despise the variability and the movement. This is part of the divine as well. You know, as this is what I was trying to emphasize, that scientifically we can see that it is all one. And the divine creation and the source of the creation are the same. They appear in the world of appearances to be different, but they're the same. So, you know, we should embrace the variability and the movement and the vibration. But at the same time, in order to receive the deeper contact of the Jyoti, of the Supreme Consciousness, it significant time of stillness, physical stillness, it's just sitting still, is very, very important in order to accomplish this. Now, having said that, it can also be accomplished through physical action. So, like I said before, some people find that they actually get there through, say, running a marathon. Or some people, you know, find that, for example, I do a lot of hiking, you know, in the wilderness and immersing myself in the beauty of the divine creation. And sometimes the walking is very vigorous, and sometimes the walking is very soft. And I'm stepping as though I'm stepping through, through a divine landscape, which of course you are stepping through a divine landscape, you know, and stepping with reverence so that every step is like a prayer. So that when your foot contacts the ground, it's a prayer of appreciation, that deep appreciation is felt in the heart for the wonder of the existence, for the appreciation of the existence. Every step is thank you for this existence. 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 So that you become the pure existence in the process of doing this. And this is extremely transformative, and it accomplishes many of the same things as sitting meditation will accomplish. If it's done with total focus, total dedication, and total surrender. So it can be done in motion as well as in non-motion, in stillness. Although I do think that we should all try some sitting meditation. We should try it. Go ahead. I heard somebody else wanted to speak.
No, Steve.
Go ahead.
That was not a question, Steve. Sorry.
Okay. Good. So I think I attempted to answer that. Hopefully I answered the question. And if not, feel free to follow up with another question. Okay.
Okay. Does anyone has any other questions? Okay, then I think we can conclude the session for today. Steve, once again, thank you so much for taking time to explain about the science and spirituality. Actually, you know, it was a very long discussion or, you know, talk by you. But I know you mentioned to me that it will take even 2 to 3 days to cover the entire topics. But you were able to squeeze everything within a couple of hours, which is really great. And thanks for taking time today morning sharing your views with us. Thank you so much. It was really wonderful. And I'm sure as Mrs. Anbu mentioned that we couldn't assimilate all the things that you had mentioned. Maybe we may need few times to play the audio and try to grasp more about it. And certainly we will come back to you if we have any other questions. And to the friends, you know, who have joined here, Steve has shared some of the materials in PDF, which I would be sharing it with all of you over WhatsApp or email. So let me know if somebody wants over email, send a mail to vallalaruniversalmission@gmail.com, and I can share with you. Otherwise, I will be sharing it with the group in the WhatsApp group.
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna post the PDF notes on the WhatsApp group?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah. So the outline of the whole talk is in PDF form and it'll be posted to the WhatsApp group. And you can also email me directly with any questions or thoughts, and I'm happy to help with any, you know, questions of sadhana or understanding these matters. If you want to email me at Steven, that's Steven, at yoga-losangeles.com. That's yoga with a hyphen and then losangeles.com. And my website is spiritscienceyoga.com. And if you want to follow me on Facebook, it's facebook.com/spiritscienceyoga. And I post things on these matters. If you go to my Facebook page, right now you will see some videos that you can click on. And if you access the PDF, then all of the terminology is there, and you simply enter it in Google or on YouTube, and you'll come up with many, many, many videos that will help you understand these points. It's worth the effort, because once you understand and have the realization that science itself is communicating back to us the very teachings that we have always believed in, but in a different form, in the scientific form, it becomes a revolution, because this is, in fact, the divinity is actually speaking to us through the scientists. The divinity is encouraging us to continue our spiritual path through the scientists, in spite of the fact that most of the scientific community for so many years has actually been trying to refute the divinity. Their own work now forces them to at least go to the boundary of the divinity. Okay, maybe they don't want to pass the boundary, but they're very, very close. They're so close, you know. And this is a way of the divinity speaking back to us, even through people who consider themselves to be, in a certain sense, you know, contrary to us. How fascinating is that? How wonderful is the divine? Yes. So, you know, email me if you have any questions. I'll be happy to help you. And I appreciate so much being given the opportunity to express all of this to all of you, to such a well-informed and dedicated and devoted group such as the Sanmargis of Valalar. Very much appreciated. Aruparun Jyoti to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. May I request Raji Amma to read the Vinnapam.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Steve, for the wonderful speech about the science and the spirituality. I'm going to read the Samarasa Sutta Sanmarga Satya petition. Uttiranyana Siddhipuram allies of and Uttiranyana Siddhipuram allies of and by the Tiruvarul, the names that are surrounded as things can do special names of, and Parvathipuram allies Vadalur of, and the name of that were given as nicknames to refer to all, having those names pronounced as starring Godpadi, in that the natural revealing of fullness is a pure Sivanubhava Jnana Sabha, in that wearing the natural truth filled God form, the natural bliss filled Sivananda, one's holy dance performing just for all the life forces to get the joy showered. Everything can do unique, head of the God Aruparun Jyoti. O the God, all the highness to your holy community, I am submitting my Samarasa Sutta Sanmarga Sangha Satya petition. In this world, six sense superlative body that I got of I am, for this body often and often is suffered by, such as deafness, disease, aging, fear, and the pain, and to cure all of this suffering, make this body itself to become a Nitya body, so that in whichever times, in whatever places, in any manner, and in any way, without any obstacles, I should be able to live by getting the blissful siddhi. Great life is what a true, strong and huge effort of my desire. In this effort of my desire, like all the sufferings be cured, and making this body itself a Nitya body, so that forever undestroyable, blissful, great Siddhi life could be attained. And what way it could be possible, like when I started thinking about time, no other way one should be getting this, and all can do God's freedom. It's the only way one could achieve this, and I came to know as it was announced by the Tiruvarul. After that, what way we could get God's freedom, like when I started thinking that time,
mind and eye, of body freedom, bhoga freedom, and jiva freedom. And all these three things should be eliminated. In that time only you get that. And I came to know as it was announced by the Highness Thiruvarul. Hence, holding that of being my freedom such as body freedom, bhoga freedom, and jiva freedom, and all surrendered to the Highness Thiruvarul as his full freedom. Given up that time, this body, the jivan, and the bhoga thing, and all are only given by the full freedom God of great mercy. And other than that, it's not of our freedom that we hold. So this truth I came to know as it was revealed by Thiruvarul. Herein after, from this body, and from this jivan, and from this bhoga thing, by the evidence of Thiruvarul, none of these freedoms would be appeared as my freedom. The Highness put forth the Thiruvarul freedom to me and blessed. She cured the sufferings of this deafness, disease, aging, fear, and the pain, and making this body itself a Nitya body. And I should be able to live forever, undestroyable, and forever blissful, great Siddhi life. Likewise, all the life forces who got this body should also be revealed the way as it was revealed to me, and also make them a privileged people to get this and should be able to live like me. Your Highness, for your great, graceful rule, welcome, welcome, Aruparanjodi, Aruparanjodi, Tani Parankarne, Aruparanjodi. Let all living beings live blissfully. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was wonderful. That was a revelation to me. What is the source? What is the source of that prayer?
I can send it to you, Steve.
Yeah, please email it to me. I actually must have that. Thank you. That was wonderful.
We'll do that. Thank you. Thank you, Raji Amma. And Anbu Amma, do you want to sing the Jodi song?
Sure, I will.
Okay, thank you.
Jodi, 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 suyam. Jodi, 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 param. Jodi, 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 arul. Jodi, 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 sivam. Mama, jodi, soma, jodi. Vana jodi, jnana jodi. Maha jodi, yoga jodi. Vada jodi, nada jodi. Yema jodi, vyoma jodi. Yera jodi, vira jodi. Yeha jodi, yeha jodi. Yeha jodi, yeha jodi. Adi nidi vedane, adal nidu padane. Vadi jnana podane, valha valha nadane. Varga varga nadane, varga varga nadane. Tiruchitrambalam, Aruperum jodi, Aruperum jodi, Taniperum karunai, Aruperum jodi. Yellam seyalkoodum.
Thank you, Anbu Amma. I thank you, Steve. Thanks for taking time and joining us today. And I also thank everyone who participated, listened, and participated in this event today. We look forward for you to continue to join us on these Sunday events. Thank you so much. With this, we come to an end. Vaali enai thooki vaitha karadarangal, vaali ellam valla manimandram, vaali nadam, vaali arujyodi, vaali nadarajan, vaali sivanyana vali, vaali en nandavan, vaali en konarul, vaimai endrum vaali, எம்மான் புகழ் வாழி, என் நாதன் மலர்பதங்கள் வாழி, மெய் சுத்த சன்மார்க்க பெருநெறி மாண்பு கொண்டு வாழி இவ்வையமும் வானமும் மற்றமும் வாழியவை. அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, எல்லா உயிர்களும் இன்புற்று வாழ்க, கொல்லா விரதம் குவலயமெல்லாம் ஓங்குக, வெள்ளல் மலரடி வாழ்க வாழ்க. சத்குருநாதா சத்குருநாதா, சன்மார்க்க சங்கம் தழைக்க அருள் தாத்தா. திருச்சிற்றம்பலம். நன்றி. தேங்க்யூ. தேங்க்ஸ் எவ்ரி ஒன்.
Thank you.